Powered from the Sereno Cigar Company Studios in North Carolina and broadcasting from the Ventura Cigar Company Studio in California, it's episode 110 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, we welcome Francisco Batista of Royal Agio Cigars. In our Alec Bradley Live True segment, we'll talk about the end of the baseball season. And in our deliberation segment, we will tackle some industry topics. And as always, the Primetime Show is sponsored by Saga Cigars. Every new blend borrows from the past, and the Saga Blend Number 7 has done just that. It is the perfect combination of timeless knowledge of traditional tobacco and the newer balance that today's cigar enthusiasts come to expect and love in a finer cigar. Leveraging six generations of experience and tradition of the Reyes family, Saga Blend Number 7 delivers a unique, full-flavor, medium-bodied cigar. The cigar is highlighted by a Brazilian wrapper over a blend of Central American and Dominican tobacco. Available in three sizes at an affordable price, Saga Blend Number 7 is sure to please and bring together past and present. And by Perdomo Cigars, awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers: a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sungrown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar blends include the Perdomo Estate Selección Vintage, the Perdomo Double Age 12-Year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, the Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, the Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And my Villiger Cigars. Since 1888, Villiger Cigars have been experts in everything tobacco, including offering a wide range of premium cigars for all connoisseurs. Villiger's La Vencedora, which translates to the victor, is the first ever full-bodied Villiger cigar and carries a special meaning to Villiger Cigars' chairman of the board, Heinrich Villiger. The Villiger La Vencedora, or the victor, represents to Mr. Villiger the arrival of Villiger cigars to the premium handmade cigar segment. It was time, in his opinion, to push the envelope and create a legacy cigar that will serve as a proper follow-up to the highly acclaimed Villiger La Florida and Glam brand. This Nicaraguan Puro is wrapped in a beautiful Nicaraguan Habano Oscuro wrapper, boasting a full-bodied smoking experience featuring highly seasoned, hearty flavors. Be sure to ask your retailer for La Vencedora, and you can visit Villiger's entire line of premium cigars at www.villigercigars.com. And by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes or Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And we'd like to thank Drew Estate for being the official sponsor of this live stream broadcast. Welcome, everybody, to Primetime, episode 110 for this Thursday, September 19th, 2019. This is Will Cooper here. I am in the Sereno Cigar Company studios this evening, joined cross-country by my friend and colleague, Mr. Aaron Loomis.
Hey, Coop. I am tired just listening to you read all of that to start the show.
I know we got another new sponsor in the second segment. I'm just thinking. it's I guess it's a good problem to have, right? So
it is a good problem. Yes,
everyone wants that first segment too. So it's like it's funny because I've had to pace myself because I ran out of breath going too fast. So I learned to just slow it down actually, right, with that segment. But yeah, it's good here because I didn't run out of breath this time. So I that happened. That was why I had to start it once over again, like halfway in there. I'm like, yeah, I went too fast. So yeah. I've learned to just pace myself with that.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I don't know what to do myself actually the next few days because everyone's gone in my house. I have a couple of my sons wandering around, but my wife went to visit friends up in Ohio. So I'm like batching it for the next 5 days, which is really good.
Sounds like a good time for grill a bunch of steaks and smoke some cigars and just, I don't know.
Yeah, relax. No, it's definitely going to be relaxing to say the least. I have like two of my boys in and out of the house, but they're older, so they,
Send them on errands for whatever you need to keep going for the weekend.
Yeah, that's pretty much. I bribe them with stuff, so you know, they need money, so like I don't have to worry about them really trashing the house or anything. So it's all good here. So I'm excited. So very good. But tonight we are very honored to welcome to the show for the first time on the Primetime Show, Mr. Francisco Batista, the master blender from Royal Agio Cigars. Francisco, welcome to Primetime.
Thank you, Will. Thank you, Aaron. I remember when we met back in IPCPR, we discussed about this, and I'm very happy to be here today with you guys, and I hope we can have a good time, and for sure we're going to enjoy this talk.
Absolutely. Now, it's been a very busy week in the news for Royal Agio Cigars. I'll disclaim this right off the front, and everyone, this show has been scheduled for many weeks, okay? We've been talking about it from IPCPR. We scheduled it for many weeks, and if you go back to the previous shows, we talked about this, and so this was not a show to kind of get someone from Royal Agio Cigars on the show after the big announcement here that happened, but there was a big announcement, Francisco, this week.
Sure.
In that Scandinavian Tobacco Group has announced their intent to acquire Royal Agio Cigars.
No, that's correct. I mean, last Monday, it became public the intention of a Scandinavian Tobacco of acquiring Royal Agio Cigars. It's an intent of purchase, of acquisition. We continue to be a family-owned company and business as usual. So we are focused on continue growing our brands and continue exciting the cigars markets with Balmoral Cigars. So everything continues the same, and if the transaction takes place, we will cross that bridge when we're there. But in the meantime, we continue being the same company.
No, that's a good thing too, you know. And it could lead to an exciting new chapter for you guys too. So
of course,
a lot on the horizon with that. So wanted to kind of get that right out of the way at the top. Obviously, there's a lot of unknowns. The transaction hasn't completed yet, and there's going to be some time with that. So, there's a bit of you guys have to continue to forge on business-wise.
Sure. I mean, as we spoke before the show, the transaction is expected, if occurs, to take place within the first half of 2020. So we still have some time to continue working, and we are focused on what we're doing. We're going to talk about a lot of interesting stuff. There's a new release coming soon that I will give you only a few hints.
Okay.
So we are very excited.
That's great. That's great news to hear too about that as well. You know, we want to kind of get to know you a little more first. You are the person, you are the master blender, you're the person in the factory there, and you're obviously your footprint's on a lot of these great cigars we've had the ability to smoke. So give us a little background. Let's start off at the beginning. What were you doing like first when before you even got in the cigar business?
Yeah, the first thing, just to give a little bit of more information about myself, my career, I'm an industrial engineer. I've been always working in a driven and manufacturing environment already for more than 20 years. Before working for Agio, I was working in the automotive industry for a company named Sensata, which is formerly Texas Instrument.
I was
working in the automotive division, making circuit breakers and sensors for the cars. Huh? And yes, my passion has always been to create products, to improve the quality by making the process more consistent. And back in 2009, as you may know, the big crisis in the States and worldwide, especially with the automotive industries, I have to make a choice whether I stayed working for an automotive company and go through that difficult time, or I just step out and look for a new opportunity. So it happens in a blink of an eye. I was approached by PricewaterhouseCoopers, and within some weeks, I had a job proposal. I didn't know where. They didn't tell me what type of company it was. So after several interviews, I was invited to go to the factory in San Pedro. And I remember the time when I'm in my car in front of the factory, and I was coming for really high tech, and I was in a cigar factory. Yeah, I was in a cigar factory, and so, and I was thinking in my mind, what the hell I'm doing here? But I already traveled for an hour and a half, so say, what the heck, I'm here. So if I already made it, I'm just gonna go and have an interview, and if I like it, perfect. If I don't like it, then nothing happens. But the strange part is that as different both processes are, there was something on the environment that made me immediately say, it's not that bad as it looks. Eh? It's not so, it's very different. It's like you're working with technology, and suddenly you're making handmade cigars, which is actually an artisan job. So, but I don't know, I was talking to, in that time, to the head of production, a Dutch guy, and it felt like family. It felt like a big family, and I immediately fell in love. And 10 years after, I'm still there and enjoying it every day.
So some of the things, did they bring you in originally to kind of, you know, look at the factory from an efficiency and an ergonomic standpoint? Was that kind of what you would...
Sure. I mean, if Royal Lager Cigars and the Winterman families have been in the business for more than 115 years, so the know-how on tobacco, they have it already for generations and generations. What they were missing, somebody who can come with a different idea to bring consistency to the process, to organize the factory in a better way, and to help them grow the business. So when I was approached, they didn't want to have one person that comes out with the same vision that they had on the tobacco industry. They wanted to have somebody who they can teach the tobacco, and then that person that joins the company can also comes with some added value for them. So that was the reason why they decided to bring somebody out of the tobacco world.
And were you a cigar smoker at the time?
Since I was 18, I've been an occasionally smoker. I smoked maybe before that, from my 18 to my early 20s, only when it was something special. After that, I started smoking more and more cigars. I became an aficionado of cigars. But basically, I remember that back in the 90s, in the DR, you couldn't find that many cigars. I mean, that many cigar brands. Basically, in that time, La Aurora's, Elion Jimenez were dominating the local market. So basically, if you smoked something, was Elion Jimenez. And slowly, we got other brands in the market. But yeah, I was a cigar aficionado before I joined Agio.
What was the factory doing back then when you joined? I mean, were they producing brands? Were they producing private labels? What were they doing at that time?
No. We have always, I mean, our factory, when I joined the factory had 150 employees. We had a small factory for handmade cigars where we were producing only, if I'm not mistaken, about 80,000 cigars a year. We were also doing machine make cigars where we were producing about 18 to 20 million 100% tobacco machine make cigars premiums, and we had a bobbin operation for loading the cigar machinery to make machine make cigars. So it was a very complex factory, small but complex, because we had many different processes in that time.
How long did it take for you to kind of say, you know, kind of look at that factory and you know, you had never went into a situation like that probably as an industrial engineer, right? How long did it kind of take to kind of get the factory to the point where you thought it would be, you know, where you would want it?
Look, I started the factory as an operational manager. And when they hired me, one of the things that they made it clear to me that if they were happy with my development through the years, I will become the general manager of the Agio factory in San Pedro de Macorís. So the first thing that I do, I just try to understand how tobacco people think. And I came for automotive business. So for me, it was very strange And I remember the first time that I entered to the tobacco warehouse that I saw so many bales of tobacco that we have years of stock of tobacco. And I only thought in my mind, with my engineering mind, what the hell these guys are doing, eh? They're having so many stocks sitting down. What the hell?
Yeah.
I understood that actually tobacco is just strategical. It's a strategical. So you have to have stocks because every crop can be different. So you cannot rely in a crop. So you have to have your strategical stock to cover any problem in the business. When I joined Agio, I didn't have a clue how long it will take. The only thing that I know that I immediately signed the contract, I dive into learning. Even when my responsibilities were more operational manager, I started testing every tobacco in a puro form. So I was smoking a lot of puro cigars made by one origin, one leaf, one only type of leaf. And I didn't stop until I could blindly pick every type of tobacco that we had in the factory. So for me, it was a challenge. Eh? It was a challenge, but the beautiful part of this is that challenge ended up being my passion. Mm-hmm. And I can say it, but don't share it with nobody. It's also my hobby now. So yeah, it took me a couple of years to understand more the business. And I mean, working with people like Boris Wintermans and the whole Agio crew, it makes it easier and faster the learning.
How big is the factory today?
Oh, today we are about 850 employees. Before the end of the year, we should pass the 1,000 employees already.
Wow.
We are growing. We have been growing drastically in the last years. I can tell you that these years we will produce in the factory. That factory that about 10 years ago was producing 80,000 cigars. Now we are about 1.7 million cigars and growing. And all the other different operations are also growing as well.
Do they still do machine-made stuff down there too? Or is it just now premium handmade?
No, we also do machine-made cigars
okay.
as well.
Okay. So it's a pretty big operation that you got.
Yeah, it's a big, just to put it on perspective, we should have right now, so you have at least an idea of the size of the factory. Totally, we should have about 250,000 square feet.
Wow.
It's still, yeah, because we talked to a lot of people, they have a factory and they have like four pairs and it's like 2,000 square feet or something. So.
No, the story has changed a lot. I mean, in the last years, we have received a lot of support and it's turning the right way. I mean, our brands are in a very good momentum. Both Balmoral and San Pedro and Marcoriz are doing great. We are now with our own distribution, which has helped in the United States, which is helping a lot also to bring the awareness of the brands. So we cannot complain how the brands are doing and we are very excited. We are very excited. We don't know yet what is the roof of the brands because the brands are growing in a very good pace every year.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. And there's been a lot of exciting things that have happened in the last couple of years, I mean, with the brand. But it all started with Balmoral, that original Balmoral 18, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that Balmoral 18, at the beginning, when we started producing, it was supposed to be a small batch. Although we had about 30 bales, that which actually by the time it was in the market was almost 20 years, because the bales were from those bales at Arapiraca Brazilian tobacco was from 1992 and 1993, and we started with a limited production, but the response and the feedback was so overwhelming that we decided that we have to continue as much as we can for that, but we knew that it would be an end for the 18-year-old Balmoral Añejo. So we decided after that, and we challenged ourselves, how can we create a cigar that we can continue the story? And that's where we came with the Balmoral Añejo XO. It was the same blend, exactly the same blend, but we were not using anymore that 20-year-old Arapiraca Brazilian wrapper. We were using now an 8-year-old Arapiraca wrapper, which also was doing pretty good in the market and had a very good response.
There, I mean, Balmoral, the brands are known for the Brazilian tobacco. That's something that Boris, I guess, it's been told Boris brings that to the table a lot. That's something he likes. Is that something you kind of worked with Boris as far as, hey, you know, Brazilian tobacco is going to be a staple of these brands that we're going to produce out of here?
No, it's funny that you mentioned it because I think everybody also thinks in the same way. And we also make a good job stressing the point about the use of the Mata Norte tobacco and also of the Arapiraca tobacco. Basically, the use of the Brazilian tobacco is not a must. When we start blending a cigar, we don't say we have to put Brazilian tobacco in that cigar. But it's just, I think we have become lovers of Brazilian tobacco. And in all the cigars that we produce, we kind of, when we don't use the Brazil tobacco, we kind of miss that earthiness and that sweetness, that natural sweetness that comes from the tobacco. And you don't need to use a lot of Brazilian tobacco. When you put a leaf under the blend, it actually complements and actually makes the complexity of the cigars very interesting. So we don't necessarily use the Brazil tobacco, but we ended up using Brazil Mata Norte tobacco in our blends.
Because you go ahead, Maren.
I would say, so it's not the starting point that everything else kind of comes around. It just happens to be the fact that you guys like to add that in to round out the profile.
Sure. I mean, and when we are blending a cigar, I mean, we do, the first round is 10 different blends. From those 10 different blends, we choose a couple of winner, and we try to improve it even further. And at the end, we make a decision. Sometimes it can take two trials of 10, sometimes three. Sometimes even after you make three trials, you're still struggling that you are not convinced that the cigar that comes out is good enough as you expected. But yeah, I mean, even when we do the blind taste, the Brazil is always there. The Brazil tobacco is always a winner for us.
Mm-hmm. I've heard people sometimes say Arapiraca is a very tough wrapper to work with. I mean, what's your opinion on that? Is it a tough wrapper to work with? What are some of the challenges, maybe, if it is?
Well, the thing is, people tend to talk about Brazil as if Brazil only had one type of wrapper. And the fact is that Brazil grows a lot of different wrappers. You have the Arapiraca, you have the Matafina. Nowadays, you have Habano Brazilian wrapper. You also have now, which is becoming very popular, even Connecticut Seed Brazil wrapper. So when you talk about Brazil, it's a big range, but I think they refer basically to Matafina in Arapiraca. And it's veiny. It's a veiny wrapper, the Matafina. The lamina of the tobacco is strong, so you have to work it up in the right way to be able to make a nice cigar, a uniform color with a nice texture.
Brazilian, and you also mentioned Brazilian Mata Norte. That's different than Matafina, right? Just to kind, yes, of, what are some of the things that you found the Brazilian Mata Norte wrapper bring to some of these blends that have really, you know, stood out? What things do you find about that?
Yeah, I think the Brazilian Mata Norte, it's a little bit, in terms of strength, it's a little bit higher. It has a little bit more nicotine, but at the same time, it has a nice earthiness that really matches really well. The Matafina is a little bit sweeter, but it doesn't have that much character as the Mata Norte. So that's basically the difference.
But we see the Matafina is the one that's used more for wrappers, and the Mata Norte is used for the other components.
Yeah, correct.
Is there any reason for that? Is it just because, again, like what you just said, it's a little more of a, you know, a more rugged wrapper? Tobacco?
Actually, the Mata Norte is a very difficult tobacco to grow. So basically, the only thing you get from Mata Norte, it's filler. You don't get wrapper, you don't get binder. So with Mata Norte, what happened with Matafina, actually, in the past, Matafina was basically grown by a lot of small growers. And then it came the plantation. So there was more experience. They start treating more hybrids. So they made out of that filler, they made wrapper by changing some of the characteristic of the seeds. So, but in principle, also the Matafina was in the past was filler tobacco. Because yields are very low and it's very difficult to grow.
You mentioned the Balmoral XO. So there was one thing I did like, Francisco, is that when you guys ran out of that wrapper, rather than still call it the 18, you said, hey, it's going to be this XO. It's still an extra aged wrapper, but you kind of differentiated that from the original, which I think was a very good thing to do.
Yeah, sure. I mean, one of the things that I'm really proud of working with Agio is that Agio is a company that doesn't lie. It is what it is, and if we run out of one wrapper, we're not going to fool around telling that we're using a newer wrapper for an older crop. We will tell you always what it is, and that's always it makes me proud. It also makes our job easier because we don't have to go and tell stories that we don't believe ourselves. You know.
Right. I'm sorry. Are you going to say something?
No, I think the consumers appreciate that as well. You know, they don't want to have a cigar and they say this tastes different than the one I smoked before, and then they find out that, you know, that there is something different about it, but it wasn't disclosed. So I think that's a good trait to have, is, you know, kind of being upfront about what the changes have been.
Look, I've been in Agio for more than already a little bit more than 10 years, and I have never seen a discussion on the board of changing one type of tobacco because if that becomes too expensive, that's not being negotiable. We always use the same tobacco no matter the prices. Look, Brazil tobacco 5 years ago was so pricey that a lot of producers, they stopped using it because they were paying $5-6 more per kilo. Mm-hmm. So for them it was not actually feasible to use that tobacco, but we keep on using that tobacco year after year, and yes, and that's why if you smoke a Balmoral cigar for 4 years ago, you smoke a new one, you will always find the same taste profile in both cigars.
That's really good as well. And I think it gave a lot of credibility when you guys came out with the XO. It gave credibility to the 18. Hey, you guys really had this 18. You had this 18-year-old tobacco set aside, and it ain't forever. So it ran out. Mm-hmm. So I think it gave a lot of credibility to what you were doing there as well.
Yeah, we still have two bales of those, huh? And we keep it in a very protected area because a lot of people ask, how can you keep a tobacco for more than 20 years still that has the taste as tobacco? Because you know that with the aging, the tobacco also after so many years start losing some of these characteristics. The reason why we are able to keep the tobacco for longer periods is because we have control areas for the tobacco. So the temperature and the humidity are under control for all our wrappers. So the aging process is extremely slow because the way we store our tobacco.
Nice.
So about, I want to say a couple years ago, the Agio Cigars, they made a decision to really kind of go into the U.S. market. And, you know, there was the establishment of, you know, you guys were Drew Estate, the partnership. You still have the partnership with Drew Estate in Europe.
Sure.
But you guys made a decision to go into the U.S. market. And at that point, you were kind of tasked to kind of, I guess, grow the brand a lot. And we saw a great amount of expansion of the brands over the past couple of years to kind of start doing that job there. So, you know, I guess the first thing is we saw the Balmoral line extend out with a Connecticut shade and the Oscuro.
Sure. I mean, if you think about if you want to enter the U.S. market, which is the biggest market in the world, with only one product line, I mean, you get lost in the shelves. Eh? Mm-hmm. So you cannot make a big impact in a country like United States with one product line. So we knew that if we want to be a respected player in the States, we have to expand our portfolio of products. So we start that process. And as you say, as you say it correctly, we first started by creating the Balmoral Añejo Connecticut. And also the same year, we released as well the Balmoral Añejo XO Oscuro as well. Both products have a great, they did great on the States. And they're still growing. They're still growing.
What, that Oscuro, talk a little about that blend. That's one that's using the San Andreas, correct?
Yes, yes. The first thing, I always get the question that we call Oscuro, and Oscuro means dark. And you see a lot of cigars in the market that are extremely dark, almost black. And I always like to answer the people that we use the darker color available in the normal way. So we don't use any additive to make the tobacco looks darker and make shiny. Sometimes you see that when you're burning the cigar, it's burning blue,
right?
Because it's using additive. Sometimes they heat it up very with high temperatures, but at the same time, then you lose some of the essential oils. So we normally we use the darker tobacco that is available in every crop. Sometimes is a darker shade than another. But yes, we use a Negro San Andres as a wrapper. The binder is a Dominican Olor, and it's from the area of San Victor. There are two basically areas in Dominican Republic where they produce Olor tobacco, but we prefer the San Victor area. Number one, because one of the most important characteristic for me of the binder is that the binder has to burn. If it doesn't burn, doesn't matter what you have in your filler, you will have a cricket burning, and we don't want that. So it also has this very nice flavor. It's also very sweet. So in that for that wrapper, we choose to use that binder. And then the filler, it's a combination of Jalapa. It's a Jalapa Ligero from ASP, which is one of my favorite fillers from Nicaragua. And we use also the Matanorte, our signature Matanorte, and we use Ligero Olor tobacco from also for the San Victor area. So what I like about this cigar is a medium plus. It has this nice dark chocolate coffee taste with nice notes of dry nuts, and always that underlying sweetness that you can actually find in every Balmoral cigar.
And then you had the Connecticut shade, which talk a little about that blend.
Yeah, the Connecticut shade was one of the most I would say crazy blends we have ever done, because we went completely out of the comfort zone. We were struggling with the decision if we would do a Connecticut or not. But we need a Connecticut in our product line because it's one of the best-seller cigars, because we wanted to create, to complete the entire pyramid of products. So we decided to use a Connecticut River Valley wrapper. We don't advertise this, but we use an Ecuador Sumatran binder from 1999 that we buy from ASP, the entire bales that they had there. It was actually wrapper tobacco, but we use it as a binder. And the combination of the tobacco was really what we call, and what we like to call, a process of curiosity. Because here in this plant, we use the Olor tobacco, we use Matanorte tobacco, but there was one tobacco in particular that made the blend completely change and made us fall in love immediately with that. It was the PA41, the Pennsylvania tobacco that we use, Pennsylvania Ligero. The funny part is that the Pennsylvania tobacco is such a dominant tobacco that if you see the way we produce the cigar, we cut and weight 3 grams of Pennsylvania tobacco. So we put it all over the length of cigars. And when you say 3 grams, it sounds a little bit too too strange. But no, but it's reality. When we use 5 grams, completely the Pennsylvania takes over the blend, and then it makes it. It doesn't make it very interesting. It dominates the tobacco. So for us, the sweet spot was with the 3 grams, and yeah, this cigar. It's it has been acclaimed by all the media. It's one of my favorite cigars. And what I like about this cigar is that typically, and that's one of the things we like to break, we like to play this mold. Connecticut cigars are normally known for being thin in flavor and to be boring cigars for many cigar aficionados. So we wanted to do something that it was actually good for the usual Connecticut smokers, but also for a person who maybe normally smokes a Habano or smokes a Maduro cigar. So we didn't want to have a boring cigar, a thin and flavor cigar. And I'm very proud of that blend.
Yeah, one of our friends on the show, Ben Lee, who's been he's a guest host a couple times and a friend of the show, I think he smokes that cigar every day.
Yeah,
he's driving the numbers very good.
No, I'm serious too. I mean, he's telling me he tells me that he smokes that cigar literally every day. So,
the coffee and the cigar picture in Instagram
you're aware of it.
sure. I follow Lee. He's become my best friend after that.
Oh yeah. I mean, he was the one originally turned me on to your brand too. A long time ago, even before the expansion. So he was telling me he's got to try these cigars.
No, there. Yeah, I mean, we have received a great support from Ben Lee and from the media, and yes, again. Even when we introduced the Oscuro and the Connecticut, we still need to push a little bit more if we want to have some shelf space. And I have to give the credit to Jamie Estrada. He came with the idea of why we don't do a serie signaturas. And everybody was a little bit lost. What do you mean by a serie signaturas? So he started explaining his concept in his mind. They say, okay, we're going to take boutique factories with famous blenders, and we're going to create a blend together with them. So as he was explaining more about this concept, everybody was falling in love with the concept. So as you may know, last year we launched a Serie Signaturas, and our first release was the Balmoral Serie Signaturas Dueto, that we did it together with Ernesto Perez Carrillo. It was a spectacular cigar. I don't know if you have smoked the...
Yeah, it's
the
a great cigar. Mm-hmm. I really like it, yeah.
It was basically a 90% Nicaragua cigar for different areas, from Jalapa, from Esteli, from Condega, because Ernesto really, I think, is one of the Dominican manufacturers that better understands the Nicaraguan tobacco. And here comes Agio now, trying to slide a little bit of that Matanorte into that blend. And believe it or not, at the beginning, and that's the beautiful thing about the beautiful and the difficult part about collaborations, is to convince. We wanted to give it a fair chance to the Matanorte because we really believe in the Matanorte. So we did a lot of trials to see how it works, and we took tobacco out, we put another tobacco, and at the end, Ernesto even told me several days ago that he's even going to use the Matanorte tobacco in one of his new releases. He's already trying. Nice. So he's getting also in love with that tobacco. So,
that's great.
So you see, even Ernesto, that is one of the most experienced guys in the tobacco industry, sometimes can find something that can also ring the bell for new projects.
So this was a project you were involved with over at Ernesto's factory, right? So you were kind of spending time there, and you guys were really working on this thing, in parallel, which is great.
Sure. Also, Boris also was very involved in this project. I have to say that Ernesto, it's what you really call a gentleman. From the very first time that we explained the project to Ernesto, he immediately said, "Come on, let's do it, guys." He was so helpful through the whole process and so humble, because sometimes you ended up in collaborations in a battle of egos.
Right.
Who I will do it my way, you will do it your way, but I'm doing it in my factory, so I will do it the way I want. But I have to say that in this particular collaboration, it was so smooth, the process. And at the end, as difficult as it sounds, when we did the blind testing, both Ernesto, Boris, and myself, we choose for the same cigar.
Oh, so nice. So it
was a very nice project.
Made it an easy decision.
Well, it made after several decisions, because maybe that's the part that you don't know. Sometimes we smoke the cigars at Ernesto's office. I take some samples with me to San Pedro. Boris takes some samples to Europe. Ernesto takes some samples to Florida. Suddenly, he says he loved the blend when he was smoking at the office, but when he went to Florida, he didn't like it anymore. So he said to his mom, "Guys, I didn't like the blend anymore." I said, "Oh my goodness, we go back again from point one." And the same happened with Boris when you took it to Holland. And I guess it's the weather is different, so it's it also plays a big role in the cigar.
Sure.
But at the end, we really find the right blend that will work for all the different countries.
No, that's great to hear. And like I said, I enjoy that blend a lot, and they're aging great too. I have some just aging, and they just age really nice too.
They really age really nice. I completely agree with you. But it's a nice combination of that elegant robustness of EPC and that what we like to call that sophisticated complexity of Amoral cigars. So that match makes a really special cigar.
And our friend Brian Hewitt, who also is in the media, is Ben's partner, is saying that Connecticut is legit. So
thank you very much.
Yep. So getting good praise there. So last year, you know, the Duetto comes out, the expansion of the Balmoral line, but you also introduced an all-new brand, the San Pedro de Macorís brand, and that one caught a lot of us by surprise. These were value-priced cigars. They were positioned as value-priced cigars, but I think we were really pleased with the end results of these cigars, a lot of us.
Yeah, look, what it make it easier for us to be able to create a value cigar, a value price cigar, with using still premium tobacco, is that we buy so many tobaccos all over the year that we can really hand pick for the tobacco that we use for all the products. We can hand pick some bales, some of those best bales, and still using it to create something that it's available for a very nice price, but it will give you. It's a $5 cigar that smokes like an $8 cigar.
Right. Or more.
Yeah. And it covers the whole range. I mean, it comes with an Ecuador, which is a smooth cigar, very creamy, very flavorful. You have the Maduro. It has that dark chocolate taste. It comes from that Arapiraca wrapper. Very smooth as well. And well, a little bit more power, more in the medium line. And the new additions that we did this year, IPCPR, that we introduced the San Pedro de Macorís Nicaragua, that we use a Nicaragua wrapper and Habano wrapper, a lighter shade, and the Habano. Both very similar in the blend configuration than the original San Pedro's. The only difference that we wanted to spice it up a little bit more. We wanted to create more the medium to full experience. So we added to the blend some Nicaragua Ligero from Esteli to spice it up a little bit more and to increase the complexity of the cigars.
Yeah, I'm actually smoking the Ecuador, and I'll give some thoughts that once we finish the interview part. We'll talk about it. But yeah, I can't believe that these are like cigars that are under $6 as I keep going, because they smoke like you said, they smoke like $8 to $10 cigars, no problem.
No, look, Will, the way that we treat our cigars, we 100% test the draw of our cigars. We can make a human mistake, but it's going to be an exemption when you find a cigar, a Balmoral, or either a San Pedro, that doesn't draw good. All our cigars are draw test. We actually use very experienced rollers, and a lot of people ask me, but how do you find experienced rollers in San Pedro? Well, you are the only factory. And most of the people geographically doesn't know where is San Pedro. But just to give a little bit more information, we are just 20 minutes away from La Romana, where Tabacalera de Garcia is, which is a factory that produces more than 30 million cigars for the last 30, 35 years. So the know-how on the region, Pedro de Macorís and La Romana, is huge. So there already are a few generations of rollers and bunch makers that are there. So that has made easier our path to expand the production without being able to get into backlog issues and all that kind of stuff.
And you have to be really pleased with the reception that this brand got. It definitely got a very positive reception, I think, across the board.
Sure, sure. Not only in the United States. I mean, this cigar is selling in countries, in difficult countries, for example, like France, is doing tremendously good. And countries like Germany, like Holland, the cigars are doing great. I think also, and I have to give another point to the U.S. team, the way that the U.S. team handles the media as well, it helps a lot, because nowadays we live in a global world. So in the past, it was a pretty market difference between the American market and the European market. But that's not the case anymore. Now the new generations are always listening to podcasts, are always buying cigar magazines. They're always in the internet looking for what's new, what are the reviews of the cigars. So all the efforts that we are doing here in the United States are also having an impact in all other countries in the world.
Yeah, and I gotta give a shout out to Jamie. He's been great. We've been dealing with him for a couple years as well, and we've got great support there as well.
Very happy to hear that.
Yeah, because it helps us learn about these blends and learn the story behind it. And you know, obviously, we work to get you on the show, so he's been tremendous to deal with.
Yeah, Jamie is a fantastic person, fantastic guy.
Yep. Now, also at the show this year, this was, I think, one of the standout cigars, in my opinion, of the whole show. The Forts Balmoral, the Nicaragua. So talk a little about that blend, because that one was one, I tell you, it was one of my favorite cigars at the trade show this year.
Look, this is one of the blends that we have worked out more. I mean, this we really, really have to put a lot of effort to get this blend in the show, because we were looking for one specific wrapper. We were looking for a Nicaragua Habano Colorado. So to really find that wrapper in the color grade and with the priming, because we didn't want to have a very light wrapper, a very low prime. We wanted to have a stronger wrapper, a bold wrapper with more oils there. So we spent a lot of time trying to get that wrapper. And finally, at the beginning of the year, we received several bales of the tobacco, finally the way we were using, and we started working with the blend. And we fall in love with the blend. We wanted to have something more on the medium plus to full body to complement also our portfolio. It's a cigar that it's so complex. The complexity of the cigar is there. I mean, the transition of the flavors, it's so enjoyable through the entire of cigar. Although the nicotine content of the cigar, it's quite high, the cigar is very smooth. You don't feel any aggressiveness. All the tobaccos are marrying together in the right way. And we're extremely pleased with that cigar.
Yeah, I know. I smoked those at the when you had the hospitality suite too. And I probably smoked 8 cigars that day. And I was like, I'm getting this cigar, It was, yeah, like I said, it was one of the blends that really stood out for me personally at the trade show.
Yeah, I personally like a lot the Nicaragua Habano wrapper. It has that toastiness that really makes that cigar special for me.
And that cigar has now hit the U.S. market, so now it's available, correct?
Yes. Now it's available. And yeah, I mean, we are ready with production. Cigars have been aged properly. So yeah, we are ready to conquer the U.S.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Now there was, you know, we were talking about the collaborations in the Signature series. There was another collaboration that happened this year. I think this one caught a lot of us by surprise because it was with Lito Gomez, someone who's not known to do these types of things with people. You guys kept that under wraps pretty good because when the announcement was made, it caught everyone off guard.
Sure. I mean, even for us, it was really a nice surprise because when we were thinking in names to do the follow-up of the Dueto, we couldn't think in a better name than Lito Gomez because we were targeting to a boutique factory, to a cigar celebrity. So who better than Lito for that, eh? And I think me personally, I have a very good relation with Lito and Tony and Boris as well. We have became there since last year, the distributor of La Foro Dominicana in Holland and in Germany. The brands are doing great. So we are collaborating in different aspects. Eh? So when we approached Lito, Lito immediately told us that he was in. He made us clear to us that he doesn't do collaborations and that he's making an exemption. Because first, he likes the way we work. He likes the cooperation, how professional it's going. And yes, I mean, I think it was one of the biggest surprises of the IPCPR this year.
Talk a little about the process now working with Lito, maybe versus Ernesto. How is that, you know, different or the same, maybe?
I have to say it's different. It's different working with Ernesto and Lito. Ernesto, it's more quiet than Lito. When it comes to blend, he has always very fair points. Lito, from the very beginning, made it clear that for make these cigars, we have to be all in the blending table. So we're not going to do it from distance. We're not going to do it. No. If you want this cigar, we have to be all together on the blending table, making our hands dirty, changing blends, and testing different cigars. And that's how we do it. But it was difficult because both Lito and Boris has very tight agendas. So for me to put those two guys, one living in Dominican Republic and traveling every time to the U.S., and Boris living in Europe, to put it in a blending table in 2-3 occasions, what's hell? Once I thought that I had it right, one cancel. And then it was always very difficult to get them together. But we finally succeed. And I have to say that Lito was, Lito also, I have to give a lot of credit to Tony. Eh? Tony was a great help as well in this project. I think when we say when we don't mention also Tony in this project, we are a little bit selfish because I think Tony played a key role in this cigar as well, in this project. From the designing standpoint, the end product, Tony was very active as well there. So I will be eternally grateful with La Flor to cooperate with us, to give us the opportunity to blend together with them. And again, we come to the same point that what type of cigar we are making. Eh? So we were in the blending table, and I say, okay, from the very beginning, We were very clear what type of wrapper we wanted to use. So we choose for the Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, a darker shade. And then what type of filler we're going to use. And we start blending Lito's tobacco from his farms, also with tobaccos from Brazil, that we have a very good expertise on that. Yeah, after several trials, we were able to create a product that both companies were pretty satisfied. The cigar was introduced, and only as I like to say, we were only teasing in the IPCPR because we didn't have the cigars ready to ship. So several samples were given away to the media, to some others. But the feedback that we got was overwhelming. I mean, the cigar really conjunts that boldness that characterized the cigars from La Flor Dominicana, and that sweetness and elegant complexity from the Balmoral cigars. So again, I think the Serie Signaturas Part 2, Paso Doble, it was also a success at the show. And since the start, we misjudged the forecasting because the sales of the cigar on the show basically double our expectations.
Yeah, that was a cigar that I think I heard a lot of people actually in the industry were excited about that. Did you guys have a steady flow of people kind of coming by the booth trying to sneak one of those cigars out of there?
But we were very limited because we didn't have that many cigars. So we decided, okay, we're gonna give it to the media, and everybody that goes to the hospitality suite, we will get a box of cigars with one cigars of each. So it was very limited, and yes, a lot of people tried to go and sneak, and can you give me another one? But even when we want to, we couldn't.
Right.
So we disappoint a lot of people, but again, the response from the market, it has been incredible.
That hasn't hit the market yet, though, right? That's still to be released?
Well, we already we ship actually today. We make the first shipment to the U.S., so it's going to hit the market next week.
Nice.
So when we were at the show, you met our third member of the crew, Bear, who did the interview with you.
Yeah, sure.
And I think I told this story, but so Bear has like two, like we call him a little bit of a fanboy, right? But he has like two blenders he just like goes head over heels of, and they happen to be both Ernesto and Lito. so we kid him about. So when the announcement came out about Paso Doble, Bear was at his day job, right? And I had the announcement, and I said, "Hey, Bear, you're never going to guess who's doing the next of the Balmoral signature, Series Signatures." And he's like, "Don't tell me Lito Gomez." And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "You're lying." Then I send him the release. He's like, "Holy cow."
But if you think it well, and you want to go for small boutique producers, I mean, I don't think there are better names in the Dominican Republic than Ernesto and Lito.
Right.
So, both have that number one cigars, you know, by Aficionado, and they bought very successful brands over the years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you're dealing with some very, very key players there.
Sure. I mean, both of them, I mean, Lito, I mean, if you see how the brands are doing, they're doing great. I'm running issues with my battery. I only have 7%.
Okay, Aaron, do you have anything else on the blends? And I have one more. I think
you're okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so Francisco, what's the future look like? I mean, you know, obviously this change is happening on the company, but you guys are still moving forward. And you mentioned there's some things possibly on the horizon that you could sort of talk about.
I mean, I can give you some hints.
Okay.
We have already one cigar that has been produced for many months that it has been aged. I can tell you it's going to be what we like to say a geeky cigar, because it's going to be a special model. It's going to be a limitado. Mm-hmm. And soon it's going to hit the market. So I don't get surprised that within a couple of weeks you will get the press release from Jamie informing about our new project. It's actually one of my favorite cigars. I think the blend that we choose in the Vitola, it's just mashed perfectly.
Nice,
perfect.
I cannot tell you more, unfortunately. Jamie will kill me if I keep on telling you more things. But be prepared for something new for in the next coming weeks.
That's great to hear. That's great news to hear. What we want to do just to wrap it up, Francisco, we do appreciate the time, is just mention what we're smoking tonight, both Aaron and I. And that, as always, that segment sponsored by Tailored Smoke, located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter. Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for a tailored smoking experience. Aaron, what were you smoking tonight?
I'm smoking the Añejo XO in the Rothschild Massivo size. And I really enjoy this cigar. It's very got a good depth of flavors. It's nice dark, dark profile, dark wood. Some earthiness to it, nice baking spice, but it's a smooth cigar. It's not like it's an overpowering strength cigar. It's got some strength to it, but it matches up with the flavor profile. Construction's fantastic on it, but it's got a lot of body to it. And you know, sometimes people get mistaken with body and strength, but it's not a strong cigar as it's on its own. It's got a lot of body to it and a lot of like dark, deep flavor. So it's a really nice, enjoyable experience.
And I just finished up the San Pedro de Macorís Ecuador in the Robusto size, which is, I know, one of Aaron's favorites. And I mean that seriously, because he doesn't have a lot of favorites, right?
Right.
It's becoming one of my favorites as well. Very, like you mentioned, smooth, creamy. Not a mild cigar by any means, but not, you know, overpowering. Tons of flavor with it. You know, again, great construction, great draw, just an overall real enjoyable cigar I can smoke any time of the day.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's the $550 price point, but it shoots way above $550 for the price. It's
easily,
you know, there's a lot of Connecticuts that are priced, you know, in the top $10 range that this smokes better than. So it's a very good cigar, a very good value.
Yep. And then I just lit up the Oscuro right now in the Bellicoso size. So
nice.
Great. Again, great sweetness of that. As well, like that medium plus, not overly aggressive with the San Andreas wrapper, getting a nice amount of complexity with it as well. Right. So Francisco, you're about at the end of your battery. We want to thank you very, very much for coming on the show. We do really appreciate it, especially yes. with the timing. I we do appreciate that as well. So thank you so much.
No, it was really my pleasure, Will and Aaron. I mean, I really enjoy it. I think I have to call you when we do our next release, because I personally want to send you some samples of those cigars, because they are becoming my favorite cigars as well. So thank you guys immensely for the opportunity. And I want to invite all the listeners of your program to try Balmoral Cigars, to give it a try. We have a very nice portfolio of products, and they won't disappoint you. And we will continue doing our best efforts to keep on excitement on the brands. And we're looking forward to stay strong in the business in the U.S.
Great. Francisco, thank you so much. And best of luck to you. And look forward to talking to you soon. Have a great rest of the week. And we'll be in touch.
Thank you very much. Have a nice evening.
Thank you, Francisco.
That's Francisco Batista, the master blender from Royal Agio Cigars, here on the Primetime Show. And what we're going to do right now is we will do a word from our sponsors, and we have more segments coming up, guys, so stay tuned on that. Plenty of good stuff to talk about. So let's get into the segment, sponsored by JRE Tobacco. The authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars in Cuba, it was the leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Hamastron Valley of Honduras, Julio R. Aroa took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds, and in 2000, he successfully reintroduced authentic Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the JRE Tobacco has been able to continue to deliver products to market with authentic Corojo. Now with JRE Tobacco, Julio and his son Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing the authentic Corojo leaf. Tadascano offers a mild to medium cigar in both Connecticut and Habano wrapper. Rancho Luna is a premium medium cigar available in Habano and Maduro. And Aladino is available in a 100% authentic Corojo Puro, San Andreas Maduro, or Ecuadorian Connecticut, representing the golden age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer, be sure to ask for JRE Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every drawer. and by Plasencia Cigars. Plasencia Cigars is one of the world's leading growers of first-class tobacco. As they have been pioneers in the industry since 1865, five generations of the Plasencia family have continued the legacy in Nicaragua and Honduras. Today, the Plasencia family's very own cigar line, led by CEO and master blender Nestor Andres Plasencia, produces over 40 million handmade cigars each year. Plasencia Cigars celebrates their Nicaraguan roots through their premium Alma series, inclusive of the complex blends of the Alma Fuerte, Alma de Campo, and their newest release, Alma de Fuego, each harvested in the pure soils of Nicaragua. Be sure to ask your local retailer for Plasencia Cigars. And by Cornelius and Anthony, if you're going to be wanted for something, be wanted for something great. That's what Cornelius Bailey set out to do five generations ago, and that's what Stephen Bailey is doing with Cornelius and Anthony Cigars. Using the finest tobaccos Cornelius and Anthony brings to you, Daddy Mac, Venganza, Meridian, Cornelius, Senior E-Sugars, and the Gent and Mistress. You can find them at your local tobacconist. And by J.C. Newman Cigar Factory, founded in 1895 by Julius Caesar Newman, J.C. Newman Cigar Company is the oldest family-owned premium cigar maker in America. For four generations and 124 years, J.C. Newman has been handcrafting some of the world's finest cigars. J.C. Newman is headquartered in an iconic 109-year-old cigar factory in the Ybor City National Historic Landmark District of Tampa, Florida. At this factory known as Elver Hole, J.C. Newman rolls premium cigars by hand and hand-operated antique machines. The J.C. Newman Pensa factory is the second largest in Nicaragua, and it's where Brick House, Perla del Mar, El Baton, and Quorum cigars are hand-rolled. J.C. Newman's Diamond Crown, Maximus, Julius Caesar, and Black Diamond cigars are handmade by Tabacalera A. Fuente in the Dominican Republic. With longtime partners, the Arturo Fuente family, the Newmans have founded the Cigar Family Charitable Foundation, which supports low-income families in the Dominican Republic with education, healthcare, vocational training, and clean water. Visit jcnewman.com to learn more. And we're going to get into our Alec Bradley Live True segment, sponsored by Alec Bradley. Do you really want to hear another cigar that Ed that talks about fillers and binders, wrappers and aging and ratings? Blah, blah, blah. How about this? Pick up an Alec Bradley cigar, smoke it, enjoy it, spend an hour with it. You'll be one happy camper. Learn more at alecbradley.com. So we'll get into some more thoughts on, I guess, in the deliberation segment. We'll talk more about Royal Agio, but let's kind of get into, you know, our Live True segment. And I wanted to talk a little about baseball right now. Because we're about, I want to say, 10 to 12 days to the end of the season right now, which ends, I believe, a week from Sunday, correct?
Yes.
So, you know, I think this is, we still have to schedule, I guess, the baseball show. It's going to be in November. I think that's something I'll certainly work on in the next week or so, getting that date nailed down, because I have been asked already. But let's just talk, I want to talk about some of the things going on in baseball. And first, I want to just hit some of the surprises. And Aaron, I got to just say, one of the surprises that no one's talking about are your Oakland Athletics right now.
That's right. I mean, they're in the driver's seat for the first wild card spot in the AL. So I'm just hoping that they can hang on to that. They're doing it with a lot of, spit and elbow grease. They're not doing it with a bunch of star players or anything like that. So it's exciting to see them kind of continue that trend.
No, I they started slow too.
Yeah.
And they're at, what are they, at 92 wins right now?
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to get to, I think 100's a stretch. I really do, but it's not out of the question yet, right? It's close.
Right. Yeah, I think it would be tough for them to do it, but they've been on a pretty good streak. I mean, they won 8 of their last 10, so they're in pretty good shape.
And, I don't know, but does Bob Melvin get consideration again for another Manager of the Year award in the AL?
I mean, you got to think it's possible, but I don't know what Minnesota's done this year is pretty
That's
good.
Your boy Rocco Baldelli, I think, is going to be the favorite. But I think, I certainly think that you can probably put, Bob Melvin in there along with Rocco, and then possibly, Aaron Boone, considering the injuries.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that team has been decimated by injuries, but they've been, I mean, I really didn't see that coming. I thought the injuries were really going to hurt them, but they've really put it together without some of the key players.
They're at 100 wins already.
Yep.
So, I mean, they can't get to 110. They can get – I think they're going to come to somewhere 104, 105 would be my guess right now.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. But, they were a big surprise as well. I thought Tampa Bay would be good this year. I didn't know they'd get the 90 wins already, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's still – It's up between the A's, the Rays, and the Indians for the wild card spots in the AL. I think that the Rays might have a little bit of an edge on the Indians, but we'll see how that shakes out. I mean, it could go either way for those guys.
No, very true. You know, the NL went a little more to script. You know, I think but there were a couple of surprises I had out of the NL. I think the two teams that they're not going to make the playoffs, but they certainly gave some good efforts this year are the Arizona Diamondbacks and Hector Alfonso's New York Mets.
Yeah, I had picked the Mets to be a wild card team, but they've struggled quite a bit.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, some people didn't have them, you know, at 79 wins already, mm-hmm. and they're ahead of the Phillies. I mean, just go figure.
And the NL Central is a pretty tight race. I mean, it's a three-team race in the division, so that's always a nice thing to see kind of as the season comes to an end.
Well, the Brewers just moved ahead of the Cubs tonight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and they're doing it now without Christian Yelich, their best player.
It's a little bit of a bummer for them.
It is, but I mean, I didn't know if they would make it. I mean, I thought St. Louis would win the division this year. They're not out of it for the division. It's tough, three games out, you know, with nine to go. So that's not easy right now. But they're mathematically still in it as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's the possibility that all three of those teams in the Central make it into the playoffs. I mean, they can get the division winner and two of the wild cards, right?
Well, if the Nationals are fighting for that, so it's those three.
Yeah,
teams.
I mean, there's a possibility that the Nationals do it, but I mean, there's a chance that you get three from one division that go.
So. Yeah, because I think the Mets and the Phillies are really long shots right now. Mm-hmm. I think the Phillies are out of it. I think you know, they're kind of where I thought they would be right now. I didn't think it'd be fourth, but I think if you told me 78-73 with nine games to go, or is it? Wait, that's under nine games to go.
Yeah,
I think they have 11 to go. They have 11 to go. But if you told me that, I would have said you're crazy.
Right.
You know, if there were any further up there. You know, back to the Mets. I just I really have become a fan of Pete Alonso.
Yeah, man. A rookie that's kind of really, really hammering the ball.
He's a fun player to watch. He does strike out at the plate a lot.
Right, but it's, you know, he's still putting up numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Looking at some, what were some of the disappointments this year, team-wise? Are there any disappointments that you have?
Let's see, disappointments. I don't know. Well, I think the Red Sox were a big disappointment. I think that was a big deal. I think a lot of people had picked them to win the division, and they really just kind of crapped.
They're not going to win 90 games. They're not even going to win 90 games this year.
Yeah. I mean, and not having the injury problems that the Yankees had, you would have thought that they would have had a leg up, but it didn't work out that way.
I think the tragic number for the Red Sox is one. Mm. I think one more, if Tampa and Cleveland win one more, the Red Sox, I think they're out of it.
So it's an odd team. I mean, you know, Sale got hurt, so he's out for the season, but they just didn't score runs for him when he pitched. And he kept them in, you know, tight ball games, low scoring, but they just couldn't score enough runs to get him the wins. And then, you know, David Price he was not the same David Price as last year. And the rest of the guys on that staff just didn't step up.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree with that. You know, if I look over in the NL, obviously, I think the Phillies, I wasn't expecting them to make the play, but I think they still got to be classified as disappointment this year. I think the Cubs struggling to get a playoff spot is a little bit surprising. I thought they would be in for sure. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest disappointment in the NL has to be the Rockies, how they fell hard this year.
Yeah, they had a – they have a bullpen issue over there, I think, is a big problem with them.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up the most runs in the NL.
Yeah, and the starting pitching didn't come through very well either.
Yeah, I'm looking to see that the Baltimore's got in the AL's got more runs given up this year, but the Rocky, I don't know. You may see a manager change this year.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's something to watch as well with that. Any other disappointments?
I don't think so. I think that everything else kind of sorted out how it was going to go.
Maybe Detroit.
No.
107 losses though?
Yeah, but there was no there was nothing that was going to happen there. They had sold out, you know, they had sold out on everybody pretty much. And, you know, Miguel Cabrera is at the end of his run and he was hurt for a portion of the year. And they ended up, you know, trading Castellanos to the Cubs. So I think they pretty much knew that they weren't going to do it. They had a lot of young guys that they were just given a bunch of time to. So I don't consider that a disappointment. It's just, I don't know. And, you know, I thought Cleveland would have won the division. But it's not really a disappointment. They did very well. I mean, they got 90 wins right now, so they're still in good shape. But just the Twins just blew
up. No one thought – I mean, I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs this year either.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, in all seriousness, I was not, you know. But Rocco Baldelli, I think, is a better manager than Gabe Kapler.
By far. And I thought that if he had success this year, that would have been enough for the Phillies to dump him. But, to compare those two guys to see what they could produce. I mean, I think that Kapler has a better team overall.
Yeah.
But he wasn't able to produce with them.
Yeah, I think Kector gives me crap about Charlie. I think Charlie made a difference coming back. I don't think he fixed – maybe Bryce Harper is playing a little better right now. But I think it was more of a emotional thing having him – in the dugout. I think that's what, you know, and they're scoring runs more. They're just not translating into wins.
Yeah.
And it's showing their bullpen's also showing their problems right now.
Right.
So I want to turn to a couple of the player the award races. And I want to bring this one up, and I haven't talked to you about this at all yet. The NL Cy Young race.
Yes.
Who do you think is the NL Cy Young winner right now?
I think you're probably it's a toss up, and they're both on the same team. I'm looking at the wrong side. I was looking at the AL, but it's probably gonna be Strasburg, I would think.
So now this is interesting. This is very interesting. Because who would be your other one? What do you think Jacob deGrom stares right now?
Here's the deal, and it's because of the people that think like you do is the win category. I mean, he's got 9 wins because he's on that team that cannot – like, I don't know how many wins he's lost because that bullpen just blew it for him.
Yeah.
I mean, his numbers are fantastic, you know, but it just can't get the wins from the team. And that's – the wins is a team category. You know, the pitcher can only put you in a position – he can't actually win the game unless he's throwing a shutout.
So you're going to laugh at me. Mm-hmm. But this year, I might give it to DeGrom. Much as I don't like the fact he doesn't have the wins.
Right.
Strasburg's ERA is just a 3.5. I have a trouble giving it to him with that.
Sure. I understand that.
And they're about even with strikeouts right now.
Yeah.
My argument with Scherzer last year is they were very close in all the statistical categories, but I thought Scherzer had the 20 wins, which I think made the difference. This year I'm having a little bit more, you know, I'm reluctant because I think the two guys you mentioned, DeGrom and Strasburg, are the two guys who are going to be battling for this right now.
Right. Yeah.
But I have a feeling it's going to go to Strasburg this year. I just have this feeling.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be the win differential is quite high between those two, and I think that the writers are still have a little bit of old school mentality where the wins mean a lot in that.
Yeah,
in
and
that
I think there's award. A little Mets in there too, enter New York in there. I really do.
Yeah, that could be.
But it's funny because I might catch that. I know it's funny coming from me because considering the stink I made last year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I might lean towards the Grump just because I think the statistics this year there's a difference in some of them.
Right.
That ERA.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you look at that Washington, those top three in Washington, dangerous team in the playoffs. I would not want to be playing them in the divisionals this year.
Yeah.
Because they can go with, you know, Strasburg, Scherzer, and Corbin and play a 7-game series with them.
Absolutely. Yeah, and they you know, not a lot of missing of Bryce Harper over there. I mean, they did what they needed to do on the offense with that squad they have. So.
Yeah, they did. But they may not make the playoffs either. So that's something to keep in mind.
Yep.
So it may be tough. They may have to use these guys and then go into a 1-game wild card.
Yep.
And you know, against a Milwaukee or a Cubs team, and see with that.
Yeah.
How about the AL and the Cy Young? I think that's a little more clear this year.
You really think it's clear?
Well, okay, I shouldn't say the team is clear.
The team is clear. Absolutely, it's going to be an Astro. There's no doubt about
it. Okay, so it's Garrett Cole and Justin Verlander.
I mean, you could flip a coin, and I don't think people would be upset over who came out on top of that. I mean, they're really close. I mean, really close. Verlander's got one more win. Cole's got 19 more Ks. A little bit, slightly higher ERA and WHIP, but it's, you know, if you're kind of going like K per nine or whatever, Cole's got the advantage and all that stuff. Because he's got like 12 fewer innings, but either one of those guys, you can give it to him. I wouldn't be upset.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think it's going to be, but you know, I think they'll split some. Here's the only thing I can say: they may end up splitting some vote. Maybe someone else kind of sneaks up, like maybe a Charlie Morton or something like that. We can see what happens with that.
How crazy is it that Morton's going to retire after this year?
I know, right? I mean, he's having I know. How old is he? He's not that old. He's had a great year.
He's had an amazing year.
Yeah, he really has.
Especially being in the AL East, you know.
Yeah.
It's a tough division to pitch in because you're facing the Yankees and the Red Sox a ton.
Yeah. Yeah, but I still think even though they'll split the vote, Cole and Verlander, Cole may just get it because he hasn't gotten it.
Right.
Yeah, so but I think, like I said, I think it's going to be an Astro winning that Cy Young this year.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on the MVP race? In the AL or the NL?
The AL is...
It's interesting who are some of the players at the top this year.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's... bad teams.
I mean, to me, I think it's pretty cut and dry that Trout would get it. You don't think so?
How about Solar from Kansas City?
No.
45 home. He's got some good numbers though.
Yeah, but he's got some good numbers, but I don't know. The rest of his average is horrible. His on base is okay, but
yeah.
I think Trout's definitely a better defender than Solar is. So
yeah, I mean Trout had 45 home. Yeah, he had 45 home runs, 100. I think Trout. I would still lean towards because 110 runs, 104 RBIs. But again, all these guys are on bad. That's a bad team. And you look at Jose Abreu as well. White Sox having a great year as well.
Yeah.
So this is like I don't know if there's a guy from a good team. This is what's going to be really interesting. Is there a guy from a good team that you say was the most valuable player? Do they give it to, I don't think they're going to give it to one of the Astro pitchers either. So,
I mean, Bregman's probably the next best AL player.
He's got
So I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the more interesting races this year for sure.
The other thing I think is interesting is that probably the best MVP candidate from the offensive side in both leagues is going to finish the year injured.
Yeah, Yelich and Trout.
And Trout, yeah.
That is very interesting, yeah. I don't know who – Yelich may still get it.
Mm-hmm.
But, he didn't get the 100 RBIs.
Right.
I mean, you could look at Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be, I think the biggest challengers to Yelich would be Acuna or Bellinger would be the guys that I think that probably give him the biggest run.
Yeah.
Because, Bellinger's already 110 RBIs. Acuna's at 97, so he can get to 100 before the year's out. Both are going to be, 40 home runs and over. But the thing with Acuna is that he's got, almost 40. He can go 40-40 this year.
Yeah.
So that might play into it as well.
That is a very good point. He's at 39 homers and 37 stolen bases.
Yep.
Yeah. Cody Bellinger, I think, is another guy to watch.
Yeah.
Well. He's 110 RBIs, 115 runs, 305 batting average.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Big Scott asked me, what about the Dodgers? I think I still stay with my pick. The Dodgers going to the World Series this year.
I would think so. I mean, they have that's another team that you got a nice three-pitcher combo. Yeah, you got Bueller and you got Ryu, and then if you have Kershaw as your third guy, that's not a bad place to be in, right?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So I think, yeah, just one final thing on the baseball, right? I'm just going to give you some of the bubble teams. You tell me if they're in or out this year. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tampa Bay.
I'll say in.
I say in as well. Cleveland.
Out.
Out as well. And Oakland in.
In Oakland in, yeah.
Oakland in, right. Okay. And then the NL, Washington.
I say Washington's in.
I say they're in as well. Milwaukee.
I say Milwaukee's out.
I'm going to say Milwaukee's out too, just because they lost Yelich.
Yeah.
And Cubs are in, then that means.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll see. That's what we'll see what happens, and we'll be probably sometime in November. The baseball show will be after Bear's wife has the baby. Mm-hmm. So we'll get that schedule. A postseason thing. All right. Anything else on baseball?
Nope. I think we're good.
All right, let's get into some more cigar talk on our deliberation segment, and sponsored by Dunbarton Tobacco and Trust. With Dunbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blender Steve Sacca set out to create Puros on Compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Sacca's closely held values and attests in three simple words everything Sacca wanted to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion of Sacca, they are a way of life. As for the brands of Dunbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sobra Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagog, Moisture de Sacca, Todos Los Dias, and the recently released in Compromiso at your local tobacconist. And by Embon Bay Cigars. Embon Bay Cigars represent the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They select the best of the best quality tobacco to use in the aging process. Embon Bay Cigars are enrolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rollers, giving a unique smoking experience. The band portrays the detailed and artistic nature of our small industry. Try Embon Bay, Gaia, the M Cuba, and the newly released M Esteli lines. Embon Bay Cigars, where the cigar is a way of life. And by Caldwell Cigar Company. Caldwell Cigar Company launched in 2014 with a very simple mantra, create, innovate, ambition. Since day one, they have done things differently. They have challenged the industry norms to produce six that time and time again delivered on their promise. Look for Caldwell products or any number of their collaborations at your local retailer today. And by Casa Cuevas Cigars. The Cuevas family has four generations of experience in cigar making. For many years, they have manufactured cigars for many industry leaders out of their Las Lavas factory in the Dominican Republic. Now the Cuevas family brings their own brand to market with Casa Cuevas Cigars. Try the Casa Cuevas Connecticut, the Casa Cuevas Habano, the Casa Cuevas Maduro, and the newly released Cuevas Reserva line. If they don't carry it, be sure to ask your local retailer for Casa Cuevas Cigars. Casa Cuevas Cigars, from our casa to yours. So we had the interview with Francisco. Mm-hmm. I'll just kind of say this is the second time something like this has happened to me the same week of a show. It happened to me with Patrick Vivolo on Stogie Geeks.
Right.
We were supposed to have Patrick on, and the day before announced he basically was leaving his company, which was pretty much the end of the line, unfortunately, and he was joining La Polina, and Patrick really couldn't go on. It was a different scenario, but I couldn't believe it kind of happened again this week. But this wasn't a problem. They wanted to come on the show. Mm-hmm. There was no pushback from Royal Agio. I give them a lot of credit on that. Mm-hmm. They were upfront with us, you know, there's not a lot they can tell us.
Right.
I can say one thing, but when I talked to Francisco, he wasn't caught off guard by this at least.
Yeah.
You know, he knew things were going on with that. So, what are your thoughts on this?
My initial thought was that it was disappointing.
I mean, we were, yeah.
Yeah. Just because, you know, you see a brand that is, you know, kind of up and coming, you enjoy what they're producing. And then you see this larger company that's going to acquire them. And I don't think I'm kind of talking too much out of turn, but they don't have this company that's acquired them doesn't have the best track record of acquiring brands and then making them shine, right?
Yeah, and I want to definitely – we're going to get into that a little more. But, yes, I think there's a track record that we have not – maybe CAO is the only one, you know, recently.
Right. But, yeah, I think the initial reaction is just disappointment. Like you just have this feeling that the brand is just not going to be what it was. We'll just have to see what really happens. I mean, you know, if they decide that, you know, they kind of let the premium side kind of do what they do and they wanted to really focus on, you know, acquiring that machine made piece for, you know, some more, you know, brand ownership in the market and things like that, we'll have to see what it turns out to be. But I'm hoping that the Balmoral side of things can continue on in a strong fashion.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, a lot of us have embraced this brand. You know, I wasn't a fan of originally the XO. I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But I do like the 18 a lot. But I've really liked a lot of the other stuff they've come out with. And I think what we saw was something that was very different, you know, kind of something that wasn't cookie cutter. And I just kind of worry that STG is going to have no clue what to do with this particular, with these particular brands that they got under the premium line.
Right.
I think we could both assess that these are good cigars, and we hate to see them go away.
Yeah, it'd be sad.
Yeah. So, and you know, you gotta wonder about, you know, what's gonna happen with the U.S. footprint. It's gonna be a big question too. Mm-hmm. We're not gonna know the answers to this till 2020. So, all they can do is they gotta go business as usual. You never know. Who knows? The regulators may say no. So, I'd say it's a small percentage if that's gonna happen though.
Right.
Yeah. But you mentioned a very interesting thing, and I put this in the notes about some of the acquisitions over the last 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the impacts of them. So I want to kind of go through some of them, right? And I'm kind of going back 5 years, and 5 years last week was the Taranio acquisition by General.
Right.
I think we can all say, I mean, I'm not going to speak for you, but I think we could say that was not how we all turned, that was going to turn out.
No, I didn't think it would be pretty much kind of, the brand is completely axed.
Yeah, you know, I had very good expectations with that one, because, you know, Taranio had the relationship with CAO. I think for the most part, it took a couple of years for General to get CAO going, but they got it going.
Right.
They did some good projects with CAO. I think they became one of the more successful brands, and I figured, you know, Taranio comes in there. They have a strong legacy portfolio. And, you know, they were upcoming on their 100th anniversary. So I figured there's going to be some big celebration with the 100 years of the Taranio. Mm-hmm. And really nothing.
Right.
They brought Jack in. And I think Jack did everything he could.
Yeah.
To keep that brand alive. But ultimately, he did not have the tools at his dispense to do that.
Yeah, it just seemed like, you know, they made that little push with the Exodus, and they did rebranding of some of those other lines, but that was pretty much it. Like, they didn't invest a lot in trying to.
I did not like that Exodus at all.
I thought it was a pretty good cigar, actually.
Really, I didn't like it. Mainly because I love some of those predecessor Exodus cigars. Mm-hmm. Did you think that was better than any of the predecessor Exodus cigars?
No, but it might have been on par with some of them, but I wouldn't say it was better.
Yeah, I thought they did a decent job. Take the packaging aside with the Vault series. Affordable cigars, again, under $7 for most of them. I thought they were pretty good. I mean, that Blue Label was pretty good. I like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think we can honestly say that was a big failure. I don't think General ever figured out what to do with that brand.
Right.
I just think in the end, it's unfortunate. I don't know what the future is of that brand, if it's a catalog line or not, or if it's just going to go away.
Yeah, because it was like a time where they were kind of teasing the fact that Charlie was going to maybe get involved a little bit more.
Well, that's when we had Charlie. Yeah. They were talking about when we interviewed Charlie about he was going to be doing some events with them. And so I thought there was a, you know, going into 2018, I thought Taranio was going to have a big year.
Yeah, and I don't remember if we talked on the air about it or not, but there's been some talks about some other companies trying to acquire the Taranio portfolio and things like that that just hadn't materialized.
Yeah, and I've heard that there's been a couple of offers made for it, and I've heard it was priced too high.
Yeah.
I've heard at least two is what I'll say.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. But you would think that's an attractive piece of real estate to kind of for some company to get.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one was advertised as an acquisition. It never really was, but Lycia.
Yeah.
Lycia Tobacco, it really never turned out to be an acquisition. But again, that kind of, I think, another one that, you know, General could have taken that, they were distributed. They had a real popular guy in Sam, and that kind of didn't work out either.
Yeah, it was kind of a sad turn of events. You know, it seemed like there was a lot of excitement when it initially popped up, and then pretty quickly after that, it turned out it didn't work out. And then after that, the brand kind of disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, that was Sam took it back, and he really couldn't get it going either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a disappointment. But I remember they advertised it originally as an acquisition. which is, but it never, it turned out really that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about Drew Estate and Swisher?
I mean, that's probably the most successful one so far. You know, there wasn't any, you know, major changes immediately. But I think over time we've seen that there have been some significant changes that occurred, you know, in regard to personnel and things like that. But they're, you know, they're still pumping out lines and brands and continue on with, you know, Liga and things like that. Although the anniversary stuff kind of was a miss in regards to like launch and kind of continuing on. But I think overall, it's probably one of the brands that has, you know, didn't really, I don't think, lost steam because of the acquisition.
No, I don't either. And I think there was, you know, for the most part, the culture seems, you know, the culture's there within the, I mean, I think Switchers let their culture prosper. I saw improvements immediately with the marketing team, you know, when Sam took that over and now with Joe, where I just remember the old days of Drew Estate where Jonathan was sending everything to Charlie. You know, and that's how we were announcing stuff. So, I mean, I saw a lot of improvement. I mean, we've seen improvements at the trade show, how they've gone to be like one of the models for, you know, going to the trade show and dealing with it. So I think they've done very good job at their marketing. And I think Willie's done a good job growing into his role at the company as well.
Yep.
I do think the anniversary was a miss. I think they had to do it last year, though. I think they had to do it for that, you know, to take advantage of that 10-year milestone. I think they had to do it.
Sure.
Yeah. So I would say that's a successful one.
Yeah.
And I gave the capital, like, there was capital put into the company, which I think helped as well.
Yeah.
How about Jay Cortez and Oliva?
See, I'm not aware of like any changes that actually occurred from there. And I can't say that I saw any movement up or down after that acquisition.
Honestly,
the company's just been fairly flat the entire
time.
That's
been the most transparent acquisition I've seen in almost any business.
Yeah.
Where they've just continued to do business as usual. Mm-hmm. I haven't really seen it. I mean, they expanded their factory, you know, so maybe that gave some capital in there to do some more expansion of the factory, so that was good. Right. So, yeah, I mean, that one you don't really hear much about. Like, you know, they took that company and Jay Cortez, and they've kind of left it alone as well.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen any impact of Jose Oliva stepping aside.
Right.
Either. So, I mean, they're kind of the same is what I'd look at.
Yeah.
I trade good. How about back to Scandinavian? What about Thompson?
Well, Thompson's pretty much closed up shop, right? That's
But there's still a Thompson cigar, right?
Yeah, but I mean, they kind of absorbed that into the existing structure of what they already had. So I don't know if that was an acquisition for some of the structure of the business or just for the contact list or what it was.
Yeah, I mean, they still have their website.
Yeah.
But you go on that website, you can see a lot more general product. I'll say that.
Right, right.
Focused as the difference there. But they still, they're still doing some of their private label stuff as well. So, yeah, I don't know. If you look at the site, though, it looks a little more like a CI site.
Right.
It's kind of got a very similar feel to it with that. But, yeah, there's really no more Thompson cigar per se in Florida.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think the jury's out on that one. How about Zycar?
That's one that I think still a little fresh to kind of see what's actually going to end up happening there. I know there's definitely been some turnover in regards to personnel for that. You know, some of the principals have left, but maybe a little bit of drop down in innovation over the last
year or so. But I was going to say maybe that's to get the new team, you know, okay, they maybe had to kind of absorb the new team and, you know, just, you know, they had to have a down year to do that.
Yeah, I'm curious to kind of see the, you know, quality of the products over the next few years and see things like that, or what new products that get launched under that brand to see if they kind of stay up to what the pre-acquisition kind of quality level was. One of my biggest questions after the acquisition was whether or not the lifetime warranty was going to kind of continue on. So I think it still remains to be seen with future products and things like that.
I'm about to submit something for lifetime warranty to them, so I'm going to see how it goes. I have a lighter I need to send into my high altitude lighter. So we'll see what happens with that. I haven't sent it in yet, so yeah. That'll be the first one I do since the acquisition. So we'll see. I've heard some people say it's been a little slower.
Right.
And now that stuff gets, it's a different, I heard the process is a little different now. It gets sent to Florida. I believe Kansas City's closed down.
Yeah, that's why my understanding was everything kind of moved to Florida, right?
Yeah. Weston, that's where Quality Importers is located.
Yeah.
So I haven't really seen them. Like I said, I think the jury's still out on that one. I agree. And I guess we should mention this last one. I don't know, Nomad and Ezra Zion.
Yeah. I mean, I think the acquisition went exactly as we had thought it would go.
I don't think there's any surprises. But they did announce the Amber Ale today, just so you know.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much what happened was they took over the brand and they pretty much just made the brand what, you know, Ezra was doing. And they pretty much, I don't know the status of the existing brands. I'm not sure if those are actually continuing on or if they've just kind of been mothballed.
You can still see them on the site. I think you can order them to their website.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think pretty much it's a direct-to-consumer brand right now. But yeah, they have all, you know, they haven't invested anything in terms of regular production stuff there or even invested marketing those brands. It's been all the only thing I could see what they did with Nomad is they made very micro batch releases with it. And that's the only differentiating factor. So instead of making like 800 cigars for a release, maybe it's 300 to 400.
Yeah.
So I think that went exactly as we thought. I still don't understand what – I understand why Fred got out of it. I'm not sure I understand what Ezra Zion's gotten out of it other than the name.
Right. I don't know that like they got the mailing list or anything like that, if that stayed with Fred.
Fred kept the mailing list. I know that, but maybe because he's been doing his communication there. But Fred's taken over a year off now, so it's like 13 months, 12 months, about a year since that happened. That was like last September as well. So I don't think, he hasn't gone back into the industry really yet.
Yeah.
I think he's just enjoying himself.
Yeah.
All right. Did I miss any other acquisitions?
Not that I can remember off the top of my head. I think those are the major ones, unless I'm missing something big.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think the two we'll be looking at 2020 are obviously Royal Agio and what happens with Imperial.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of Imperial, there was some news this week. This one caught, I think, some people, I suppose, Eddie Guerra resigning from Altidus.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
He was doing really well with Altidus.
You know, so I got to wonder, you know, Eddie kind of, he took over Monte Cristo this year.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest.
Premier.
I mean, one of the premier brands in the world, right?
Yeah.
For all those things I've seen, he resurrected Trinidad this year. He did a very good job. But for him to kind of, and it sounds like he walked away. I mean, this is for him to walk away, there's got to be something. I'm wondering, it sounds like he's staying in the industry too.
Yeah. I mean, I think a few of us have at least some speculation into where we think he's going to go, but it's really just based on, you know, inside conversations or knowing some relationships in the industry, but there's nothing, I don't think concrete that.
No, I don't think there's any concrete that. Either. You know, so, but it is, I think it's a big, I mean, I don't know what, maybe, you know, when again, with this pending divestiture by Imperial,
right?
He had a wonder. I mean, he had a wonder too, but still to walk away from it, there had to be something that he's going to go to that's going to be, I don't think he's going to go and take over a small boutique brand. The only thing I can say is I think he's going to stay in South Florida. I don't see him leaving South Florida.
Yeah. I mean, and look, he's a guy that has a proven track record.
Yeah.
You know, he's with Gurkha and with Altus. These are companies that have a lot of money, can give him the resources that he needs to really do great things. And I think he's shown that he can execute on that. So, people are starting to reach out to him because they want to be able to utilize his talent. and you know, maybe the offers are good, and with, like you said, with the acquisition pending, you know, he has a reason to want to look to explore other opportunities.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a big loss for Altidus regardless.
Sure.
So, but I'm sure he's got something lined up is what, to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I think if he was leaving the industry, he would have said he was leaving the industry.
Right, right.
Yeah, but it sounded like I said, some of the comments I saw on his social media were from people in Altidus too, and it was all positive. So we'll see.
Yeah, maybe when we get around TPE, we'll have a little bit of better sense of maybe what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll know that before the end of the year for sure.
Yeah,
I don't seem like staying out of work for 4 or 5 months either, but so I think we'll know something sooner than later.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just I hope they bring back the Altidus party, though. Rob and Eddie are now gone, so.
Right.
And Raphael wasn't there. And that was one of the – you missed that. That was one of the better parties we had at IPCBR.
Yeah, I was kind of looking forward to go into that next year, but we'll have to see if that still kind of continues on.
Yeah. Well, Raphael, if you're listening, we want the party back. So, so we'll see what happens there. All right. So the last point I wanted to make, I kind of took some hits this over the last week, right, on a review. And I want to kind of just talk a little about this, right? So I reviewed Sin Compromiso in the number 7 size, the big 56 ring gauge, right? I gave it a respectable, I would say, 89 score with a buy recommendation.
Right.
I got more pushback on this review than I've gotten on any review this year. Right. I mean, you know, people sending me messages saying, your palate sucks because you're eating impossible whoppers right now. That was the best one I saw. Right. Right? There was a couple of those. It wasn't just one of those, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. What's wrong with an 89 and recommending to buy a cigar that's in the $19 range that I'm missing here?
I mean, you know my opinion on this whole thing. It's just that the expectation has been set that, you know, 89 to 90 is pretty much the average. I would say 90 is the average score nowadays.
Yeah.
So anytime you get 90 or 89 or 88 in that range for a popular brand or a popular, you know, a cigar that lots of people like, then they feel like the cigar has been slighted. You know, they're expecting a 93 to a 95 or something in that range. And I just don't think that's realistic, at least in the way I think that cigar should be scored.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, I know that was the answer for that. You know, I get my rationale, and Saka, actually, to his credit, he was disappointed in my, I think, assessment. But he did not bash the review, and he said he kind of gave his opinion. I think he's entitled to give his opinion on it. And he said, you know, it just didn't hit my palate as much as, you know, his previous three releases, the original Sober Mesas, the Mi Caritas, and the Todos Los Dias, in my opinion, were better cigars. That was just my opinion on that. Everything can't be 93, 95 by Saka.
Or anybody. Nobody's going to score that on a regular basis. That's not realistic, and that's not real. I mean, if you're a fanboy, I guess that's where you'd score those cigars. But, I mean, you have to have a range. It just doesn't work out that way where everything's a 90 or above. It can't happen.
I mean, let me tell you, there's one brand out there, and I don't want to throw this guy under the bus, right? He's because he's a big supporter of what we do, right? I just recently gave his cigar a 90. Mm-hmm. Or the brand, he's part of a 90. And I used to always get my post shared.
Right.
But this past week, there was a 96 scored in that same brand.
Exactly.
That was shared, but mine was now chop liver.
Yeah.
So that's, again, it goes back to when the 90 is a 90 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask another question here. Do you have the, is the When is 90 a 90 article coming out later this year?
Yeah, I think I will do it again. I was debating whether I was going to do it again or I was going to take a break and then kind of revisit the following year to see if it had changed or not. But I'll probably do it again.
I hope you do. Yeah, I'm kind of really curious to see where the data lies this year.
Yeah, because I think kind of in our internal discussions, we've talked about that we feel like this may be a little bit of a down year. in regards to the quality of the cigars.
That's why I think it's a good thing to do it.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of going to be the driver that pushes me to do it again, is just to kind of see, you know, do the numbers kind of stay even in regards to how the sites have done it, or is there a little bit of a drop just because of how we feel the cigars are? I just don't know yet.
Yeah, you know, the thing I'm noticing, though, is I think when you – look, I could say that the way I kind of pegged Sin Compromiso was an average cigar, like you said. And I think average cigar reviews are a dying breed right now out there.
Yes.
There's people who want to review the high scoring stuff, and then there's the occasional I want to kind of give the low score. But I think the average ones are getting missed in this right now. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm kind of curious to see where that's going right now.
Yeah, and you know my thoughts about the 100-point system. There's just not enough of variance there to be able to kind of get a range on like how cigars shake out in regards to what's a little bit better than the next one.
Yeah.
And they kind of get a bunch of cigars all get pegged into a certain score. And then it's like, all right, there's 20 cigars that all have the same score. How do I differentiate? Like out of these 20, you know, there's five that are at the top, there's five at the bottom, and then there's 10 that are in the middle. Like how do you kind of figure that out? And it's tough to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's gotta be a bell curve to some extent, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, again, there should be a lot of these in the middle of the average, and then you have the tapers on both sides.
Right.
And I think, like, you guys have done a very good job at really doing, you know, the way you guys score it is you really can identify those average cigars a lot easier probably than anybody else.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good thing to see. I think I've seen a few other sites. I mean, Half Wheel's always kind of done it, too.
Yeah.
So I haven't really seen – but it's been a down – I mean – we've had a lot of internal conversations about down year for sure. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'm kind of looking at what's going to come out, and a lot of the stuff is going to be last year stuff that's going to make it. It's been a very average year otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's still a lot of cigars that we have to get through before the year's out. At least for me. I mean, scoring date is different, but for us, I mean, there's still a lot of cigars that we need to get to, and we're not going to get to them all before the end of the year. So that could change. I mean, there could be a lot of, you know, good cigars that still are going to get reviewed this year, but there's just thus far what we've smoked. I've just felt that it's been lower than previous years.
Yeah. And, I agree, but the stuff I've reviewed from that's going to be eligible is going to be very weak for next year's rating with me.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious to see where that's going to go. And I'm very curious to see, and we'll get into it later in the year, I guess, where this consensus is going to go to here. I think this whole weaker year is going to be nothing but give the guys who have always dominated these lists a bigger edge.
That's right. And the other thing is that you have a really highly anticipated cigar that's supposed to release in November. They have to kind of see how that kind of skews things, I would say.
Which one is that? Which one's that?
The Baca.
Yeah. And no doubt Skip's worked the media with that one very well.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it would be a 2020 thing for me, but regardless, it would be, I'd have to acquire the Baca again to review it. I'm not going to do the preview, but I think that is, you're right. I think that's going to be, I think Skip, it's going to be very interesting to see. I think, you know, what's going to depend is how many people review that cigar before the end of the year.
And have you seen any reviews that have come out already? I mean, I'm assuming somebody's done it, even though they weren't supposed to.
I haven't. I don't think I have. I'm gonna do a quick Google on that.
Yeah, because Skip, you know, Skip said, he said these are just for you to smoke and get a feel for, but, you know, don't review it until like the actual production release happens, and then you acquire those and then review those. So, but I'm just curious because I figure that, you know, there's lots of people that, you know, are reviewing cigars the weekend after the trade show that weren't going to even release for another couple months. So I would assume somebody's done it, but I don't know for sure.
No, I could say it looks like it hasn't been reviewed.
Okay.
So I think people have respected that. Kind of what Nick Melillo, he did the same thing with the Tabernacle last year. Mm-hmm. He kind of held it back. But then I'm going to have my whole argument. A November release shouldn't be a cigar. That's my whole opinion, too. But.
Right, yeah.
But the one difference is that was a standout cigar at the trade show. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
No one smoked – a couple people smoked some Tabernacles beforehand.
Sure.
I know the dojo guys were smoking it, and that was there. I mean, Eric was very clear. That was why that had a lot to do with it. So I think there was a difference with the Tabernacle versus the Baca, and that people know what the Baca is about right now, and I think they'd be ready to review it.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to see that on that as well. So, yeah, that was, like I said, my Steve, I committed the cardinal sin, giving Steve Saka a score below a 90. Mm-hmm. Now there was someone else saying, what about some of the other sizes? I have not smoked through all the, I have smoked the number 2 and it didn't score any different.
Right.
That's the Torpedo, the Bellicosa. So, I have not smoked through the whole line yet. That could change some things. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see. But it just didn't hit. It's not going to be on the coupe list this year. I can tell you that.
Right.
Unless I smoke another size, maybe.
So a question from chat was, did you like the Umbagog better than the San Compromiso?
Yes.
Okay. I think I would agree with that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I would. Again, San Compromiso, not a bad cigar.
Yeah.
I still, for a $19 cigar, told people, you know, go out and buy it. I think there's enough, you know, especially people like Saka, that played it. But, yeah, I do think Umbagog was a better cigar. I think Mi Querida was better than the Umbagog, though.
I would agree.
Yeah. But that was Big Scott who asked that as well. Alan's saying the number 5 is really good. He gave it a 93. Way too high. Way too high. Where are we? We're grading on the curve here? No. You know, I liked – Saka gave me a pre-release last year of Sin Compromiso.
Uh-huh.
The blend was slightly different. The box press was different. I like that one better. I still like that one better. That other one had a little bit of a Padron quality to it too.
Okay.
So I don't know. I think he was looking for something different. But, again, not a bad cigar. I didn't trash it.
Right.
I'm curious. I haven't looked a lot. I don't see the – I've saw one or two reviews of the Tricky Tracas. And I've seen some of the Sober Mesa Brulee reviews. I think it's going to be interesting. I think Sober Mesa Brulee is going to do well in the consensus, is my feeling.
Yeah, I wasn't that big of a fan of it. I was really anticipating that cigar because I'm a really big fan of Sober Mesa.
And you're a Connecticut guy, obviously.
Yeah, I think it just took away a little bit away from the original Sober Mesa blend.
Yeah, I agree. I have to agree. Did you think it was sweet tipped?
There was definitely a very subtle sweetness at the cap that was not present on the rest of the wrapper.
Agree.
So when I was gonna smoke the cigar, I made sure to I put my tongue to the wrapper closer to the foot, and then I did at the head, and I definitely got. It's not like drastic. It's not like acid level or anything like that. I mean,
right.
It was really subtle. Like if there hadn't been a discussion about it, I don't know that I would necessarily like called it out. But I haven't smoked any of the other sizes. I smoked the Toro, so I can't really say for sure. But there was definitely a little bit of sweetness there.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. Now, what I also did with it is I actually did the same thing you did in terms of putting the tongue on the various parts of the cigar. And then I did it with an Asylum Assiduous, mm-hmm. which is a sweet-tipped cigar. And there's a big difference is what I'll just say. So you do that Insidious, and I got a little more of the sugar. But there definitely is something a little more sweet on that Toro. Yeah. So I'm in the camp to say I don't think it's per se sweet tip cigar. I don't know if anything has I just find it odd that the cap is still sweeter than the rest of the cigar.
Right.
But I don't know. I have to say, but in fairness, maybe have other brands done that and we just haven't noticed it and it got attention because, you know, it got some attention in this case.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't think it was a that big of a deal. I wouldn't, you know, hit it as a mark against the cigar or anything like that.
No, I don't think I don't even think it plays a role in how I'm going to review that cigar.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, you know, once I started smoking it, it didn't impart anything into the cigar when I smoked it. So
have you guys reviewed it yet or not yet?
A couple of us already smoked it, but the review has not been published yet.
So I'm curious. Yeah. I'm curious to see what the video is going to be like when you guys do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be interesting to see. All right. Anything else we want to hit?
I think we're good.
I think we're good. And Alan Rubin gave the tricky tracker 92. Boy, I know a website that could use his reviews. Maybe another reviewer with that.
Yeah.
You can give someone a call.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So, again, wrapping it up. We have a couple of shows next week. Bear and I are going to be doing a special edition. Most likely, we're going to be doing the we're going to do a Gordo Lancero show. And 724 sent us some cigars with that. So we're going to kind of battle those out. I think I'm going to be more objective about the Lancero than he is about the Gordo, but we'll see.
Sure.
I think I'll give it a fair shot. And then next Thursday, making a debut on episode 111, we're going to have Eric Wentworth from Hammer and Sickle.
Yep, very nice.
So, I've had Hammer and Sickle once on Stogie Geeks with obviously Eric Hansen.
Right.
But it's a lot of changes happening in the company. Even if you look at the cigars we got, the different packaging and everything. So I'm really curious to catch up with Eric's a good dude, so I'm looking forward to that. I have a lot of questions too on, you know, stuff like the Calianox and stuff like that too.
Yeah.
So absolutely. So I think there's a lot to talk about with that. Anyway, we want to thank our audience again. But that's going to wrap up Primetime episode 110 Into the Annals of History for Thursday, September 19th. Now, just 3 minutes into Friday, September 20th on the East Coast. We will see everybody next week. Have a great night, everybody.
See you guys.